Welcome to Silence Voices, Stories of MST, the podcast dedicated to survivors of military sexual trauma. Join host Rachel Smith and guests as we provide resources, community, and support for those navigating the aftermath of MST. Together, we aim to raise awareness and foster understanding. If you're struggling, you're not alone. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Silence Voices, Stories of MST. As always, I'm your host, Rachel Smith. And if you're watching from YouTube, hi there. Welcome to our new video episodes. As you can see, we're trying a lot of new things for the second season. But one thing I definitely want to highlight is that it is April, so that's Sexual Assault Awareness Month. This is a huge month for all the nonprofits and all the people in this space that are working to end the problem of gender-based violence, sexual assault, whether you're in the military or you're a civilian that lives somewhere around this globe. So there's so many organizations out there trying to make a difference, and this season, I wanted to highlight. And starting this season, I want to introduce our first guest, our special guest. Her name is Eileen Dong. She is a UN ambassador, and she's an incredible woman that has taken her pain and then managed to turn it into this amazing nonprofit. It's named HopeX Global, and she's also a recipient of the Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award. So her mission is actually ending abuse, exploitation, and trafficking globally. She has such a wonderful spirit, and she's so knowledgeable about everything about this topic, and I'm beyond delighted to have her here on the show. If you want to leave her a message, I will tell you how at the end of the episode, but I also want you to listen to the end just so you can find out what's ahead for season two and also what's in store for the Silence Voices community. I think you'll be pretty excited to hear it. All right, so we're going to let Eileen introduce herself. Enjoy.
Thank you, Rachel, for having me. Yes, this is my passion. Today I am a UN ambassador representing the voice of survivors because I have been through what I call polyvictimization that includes gender-based violence such as sexual assault, domestic violence, and human trafficking. So these are something that are close to my heart. And when I started doing what I do, literally it is because I don't want the same thing to happen to other people again. So today, as I mentioned, I'm the ambassador, but I also am a Presidential Lifetime Achievement Award recipient. I have founded HopeX Global. It's a nonprofit organization based out of Houston, Texas. And our mission is to end abuse for everyone, regardless of their background. So I'm just here at your disposal, and I work all over the place, and I'm and if I can help you in any shape or form, I'm just a message and email.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. And that is a just huge undertaking for the city of Houston, let alone, you know, globally. Houston is such a huge city. It's metropolitan. And there was a story that I had read, I think it was maybe in 2022, where there was a young woman that was, well, she's actually a teenager. She went to a basketball game with her dad. Was it in Dallas? And she went to go to the bathroom, and then boom, like that, she was taken and trafficked. And it's scary how something so normal of, oh, it's just a game, you know, like, yeah, we do this all the time. And then this incredible trauma happens that this poor girl, I think it took a few weeks for the police to actually take her family seriously. And then they found her in Oklahoma. But this is just so important because I don't think a lot of people really understand the scale of something like human trafficking. Like a lot of people are like, oh, well, I live in a really nice area. This could never happen to me. It could happen to anybody.
That's such a good point. You know, I always tell people I actually wrote a blog on my website, eileendong.com, about the misconceptions, because human trafficking is like such a dynamic issue. It's a global issue. Mm-hmm. People say, well, global, so it doesn't happen to me. oh, what does that have to do with me? And us, you know, we had the movie Sound of Freedom. It's really great to really raise the awareness about what human trafficking is. It reflects the story of, you know, I don't know if the audience, if you haven't watched it, reflects the story of a little girl and a little boy who are outside the United States. So people will say, well, that doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm with that. I know this is human trafficking, but okay, what, you know? So I always tell people, you mentioned about this little girl disappeared from the bathroom. And I tell people, I said, not only like, you know, it can happen to your backyard, happen. It doesn't matter how rich the backyard is.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary. And have an example of a mother who trafficked her own 2-year-old daughter here in Houston, Texas, and sold her, attempted to sell her for child pornography.
Wow.
She was asking, and I always ask people, I said, you know, how much do you think she was trying to sell her for 30 minutes? You know, it's a profit-driven industry. Human trafficking is a $150 billion industry. Second,
my goodness,
and it's the fastest growing worldly crime around the world. And this is the mother trafficking her daughter. It's happening in your backyard. And what is not for you to be concerned about? Do we want our children? Do we want our next generation to be careful about this? There's so much to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of my hospitalizations, this was at the very beginning of 2020. I met this woman that her story was incredibly heartbreaking, where it was her parents that trafficked her. But it was her determination to not let that define her that was just jaw-dropping to me, because she was a toddler when this started, so she had a lot of physical problems and neurological issues, and she was like, I just want to live my life and not be the monster or monsters that they were, and try to make this world a better place. And I'm like, that is just incredible. So I really commend the work that you're doing. It's not something that a lot of people can attach a face to. So I'm glad that you're here to be able to give someone to look to in order to see who's out there trying to solve this problem. So what actually led to you finding this passion and this work?
Simply, like I mentioned, I survived my polyvictimization, multiple trauma, and people came to me. I was volunteering and just like happily being the silent hero behind the scene until one day I was at one of the coalition meetings. One of the judges from, if you're in Houston, one of the 280s, issues protective orders for human trafficking and domestic violence cases. So the judge of the court came to me. She was like, Eileen, you know, your ethnicity is not underrepresented. It's not represented at all. And just like that, she was the kind of like the awakening light for me. And she said, you know, you need to do something. And I prayed. I really prayed. I said, you know, judge, I'm passionate about doing this, and my goal is to support and save lives and prevent people from happening to fall into victimization like this. But I have no experience running a nonprofit organization. I have no experience, you know, just in this work at all. I'm good at following the rules and everything. So I pray, like the movie, The Field of Dreams. They said, if you build it, he'll come. And I prayed to God, and I said, I know this is my calling, because during my traumatization, I was shaking on the floor, on my knees, alone. And at the time, I thought I was alone because my family is 8,000 miles away. I wrote a book called Thank You Predator, A Guide to Trauma Recovery from Abuse. It's on my website as well. You can get that from Amazon. And you know, in my book, I mentioned my traumatization, but it's really like, how can I help people? So I went from, you know, this point really low to this now on the UN, the global stage. How can I share the light to people who are still going through the darkness? And that was really the awakening point to me. So, and next thing you know, and he answered my prayers. A friend of mine who haven't spoken to for more than 10 years saw my Instagram post. And it turns out, because we were friends, I didn't even think about he was a movie producer, but he contacted me. He was like, Eileen, I saw all your posts about, you know, gender-based violence, domestic violence, human trafficking, sexual assault. By the way, I just want to let you know, I'm making a movie. My wife is from there. And yeah, and, you know, the cultural stigmas and everything, that just goes right back to what the judge told me. So I said, okay, that's a sign that God has sent you. You don't know, but I'm going to be obedient. And I was started. And sure enough, he equipped me with, you know, the step-by-step. And even today, I was in meetings back-to-back. I actually had two Zoom meetings at the same time because the schedule conflict. But with all the studies, all the on-the-ground work, I was able to, you know, become an expert, not only with my lived experience, but as a professional. I worked with ICE, DOJ, FBI on human trafficking, money laundering cases. And today I sit on the roundtable on the National Policy Councils and all these different organizations and boards to provide whether it's policy or procedural advices and consultation on the UN level. But these are all the work that I call the multidisciplinary collaboration, intergenerational collaboration, because end of the day, we want our next generation to be free. And we, right. You know, we talk about technology before our interview, and then they are the ones who are mastering social media and everything. But when it comes to human trafficking, online exploitation, grooming, sex torture, these are all happening on the internet. We must get them involved. And this is, you know, one of the many initiatives that we're working on this year.
That is absolutely incredible. And so how does that your work intersect with military sexual trauma? How did that come about?
Yeah, so, you know, we talked about human trafficking, we talked about sexual assault, but many people don't know that, unfortunately, human trafficking happens in the military as well, both ways. It happens in the military, but it also happens that, I'll give you some examples. So like for Thailand, the Philippines, there are a lot of the victims who were trafficked to the base, the military bases, for the business, the target buyers in this case, deployed, whether they're Marine or military personnel. Yeah. And these people, they have their travel documents withheld, whether it's passport, whether, you know, it's whatever documentation that they might need to return home. So that is one of the threats. And I wanted to kind of, you know, for the people who might not already know what human trafficking is, it's force, fraud, and coercion. So it's the coercion. They say, okay, so I have your passport. I'm gonna, kill your parents, or I'm gonna hurt your brother or sister, or you. I'm gonna kill you if you don't do that because you owe me so much money. And that's how people got, you know, trapped into this situation. And it's very hard to tell the difference. And as a matter of fact, I mentioned to you before the interview today that my one of my videos just got aired onto one of the nation's largest anti-trafficking networks about the misconception. In that video, I talked about what is the misconception of love. Because the grooming technique is they're going to shower you with gifts and flowers. And that was how I experienced. and you don't think that they're trafficking. You were like, yeah, it's just, you know, I have a boyfriend. Maybe he's crazy or maybe he's violent, but you don't know that you're being trafficked. And to be honest, I didn't know I was being trafficked. I didn't even know the terminology of human trafficking. And coming from China especially, the most I can think about is domestic violence. So for a long time, people say, are you a domestic violence victim? I'm like, yes, I am. And, you know, today I probably say I'm not a victim. I'm no longer a victim. I'm a survivor. I'm a thriver. But back then, I only know like domestic violence. And then, you know, you asked me about military sexual assault. It's same thing. Sexual assault has so much impact. And there's like all those different intersections. People think, well, while it is horrible experience, you have experienced a military sexual assault or sexual assault in general, but when that is done, it's done. But it doesn't just end there. I tell you, sometimes terribly sorry that it just started there. I use this description like, you know, if you cut your finger and the scar will heal, but the pain in the brain, it doesn't heal. And there are so many times, I mean, even myself, I have my down days and people see me on the global stage on my social media, wow, you're doing this and all those. But when I'm sitting here, whether I'm depressed or crying, I'm posting out with the whips on yes. social media about this situation. And guess why I am like that? Well, there are triggers. I give you an example, say, it can be anything. And everyone has different triggers. So in my case, maybe I hear some music. And that same music was happening during the time of my traumatization. Then it can trigger me. And you never know how many days I'm going to be down. Then it just like, it's unpredictable. And I understand, I checked with the psychologist about the medication and everything. They were like, yes, this depends on how many repetitions you have experienced, how severe your situation is, and how soon you get treated. And, you know, even this morning, coincidentally, we were doing the training I mentioned about the CEU trainings. One of them was talking about for the frontliners about victim psychological assistance. How can you provide assistance? It's the same thing. And this is the mental, physical. We're not even, you know, talking about HIV or STD.
Right.
What about the violence? Some women are never able to carry a child again, ever. If others are pregnant with their rapist, with their perpetrator, and with the people, whoever the buyers are. And not to mention the other illness, like intestine illness, as well as pelvic pains and things like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's I think a lot of people, they do think that, okay, you got assaulted, now you can just get better. And I think for me personally, it was like I had to make a choice at one point because I just couldn't function, you know, like I wouldn't leave my apartment. I was drinking a lot. And prior to that, even I was coping with alcohol and just trying to avoid and avoid and avoid. But when I did find a medication that worked with my body chemistry, and I finally felt better, it was like, okay, I can make the decision now if, like, I'm going to pursue actually getting better, or I can just, you know, keep floundering and keep staying in this depressed mode. And I think a lot of people in a victim or survivor's community, they really don't know how to support either. So when they see their loved one drinking or doing all sorts of unhealthy things, like there's so many ways that it manifests. They don't know what to do, and they don't have like a lot of times there's not a physical thing to see. Like when you cut your finger, you know, you wrap it in a bandage. But if you have PTSD, what do? So you just take medications mostly and go to therapy. But there's no real a marker for people to see that, okay, this is working or they're better. And it is horrifying to think that some people, they are somewhat trapped with their trauma because of a pregnancy or having to deal with that perpetrator for the rest of their life. And it's, I think when people finally wrap their heads around the magnitude of just one assault rather than a whole trafficking network, then they understand, okay, this is something that we really need to solve. But they, I think it's the size of it, the magnitude, they're like, how? It's like, what can I do? So that does lead me to my next question is, what can just a average everyday person, like say they've gone to a basketball game or they're just going about everyday life, like what can they look for that are signs that maybe someone is in that situation? Like how could they help them?
Yes. And I think, you know, to answer your question, I like to touch upon two things. One is I'll answer the question directly. How can we like watch out for the signs? So as I mentioned earlier, if a person is, you know, having their travel document, and most of the time in these cases, these are like maybe foreigners. And as I sit on national boards working with, not just we tell people that you will travel with them for their behavior. They might act just like weird, like, you know, maybe not sociable. Like there are people, they say, okay, you know, the traffic will tell you you're not allowed to talk to any strangers because they were worried that maybe we'll tell them to call. And I'll be honest, these people might not even know there's 911, but at least they will tell the people. And so they are kind of like restricted from their just like normal personal activities. Mm. And another sign to watch out for, I talked about the grooming and the showering with gifts are like, especially, you know, if you're a parent, and you see your daughter, like, you know, or your neighbor, just like current neighbor, see, you know, this family doesn't look very rich, but all of a sudden she shows up with Louis Vuitton purses, all of those fancy bottles or computers and all those, then the gigs that people don't usually have. Well, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm.
And then another sign is like, you know, if you, again, we talked about social media. If your parents, you see your children, they're on the phone, all of a sudden you come, they hide the phone. And well, that's something you need to watch out for. And there's this app called the Calculator app. And they're able to hide what they're doing under this app. And it looks like just like a calculator. But well, you need to, you know, really monitor your children's phone. And I understand nowadays, like, there are times my phone died and I cannot operate. But try to, you know, monitor your children's phone. Limit their usage on the phone. And perhaps, you know, I work with youth. There are college students. They're like maybe high school students. They're not allowed to have Facebook account. They're not allowed to have this. And there are times, unfortunately, you have to set the rules. Do I want my children to have this social media life? And, you know, we're all learning, like, for us to make the impact, we do interviews like this with your campaign, but we're having to learn about how do we impact our next generation, the Gen Z, right, the millennials. And, you know, I learned this, like, I literally learned last week on the project. They were like, if it's not in front of my face, if it's not on my social media feed, I don't care. So how do you put message out to them? So that's one thing I would suggest, really, just to watch out some, you know, abnormal behaviors that it is not you see normally. And the other thing you talked about earlier about the support system, I wanted to emphasize, because I think, you know, there are two parts. One is the prevention. And, you know, as I work on the international levels, the 2022 TIP report stands for Trafficking Persons Report, adopted the fourth P, and the four P's are prevention, prosecution, protection, and partnership. So we need to really like incorporate, okay, you know, there's one side that we're trying to protect the people from what has already happened to them and prosecute them and work with partnership. But there's also the part of prevention. So on both sides, we need a support system. I met with someone coincidentally, you know, also on my UN trip last year. He said, I just give the love to my children. And then I understand sometimes, you know, parents are not together, especially single parent children have higher risks. The family court system had a lot of experiences with children with that. The CPS children, the foster care children who I, you know, also sit on network with. But how can you give them the love? If you are the parent, give them the love. If you are the father, be the mother for them. And while, you know, at the best knowledge you can, I understand, you know, talking about sexual assault, and one of the signs is like abnormal menstrual because of the sexual assault. So I'm going to touch upon a little bit. So like, let's say if you're the dad and your daughter has the menstrual issue, well, maybe you can find an aunt or your sister or your mother or, you know, someone, a female to guide them through that. But it's not all about that. It's about just being there for them.
Right.
It, regardless how rich you are, it's not like, okay, here's the money and you can go buy Xbox, is it called?
Yeah.
You know, video game or go shopping. No, be there for them. I remember when I grew up, my favorite time every day is the dinner time because that is the time I get to connect with my parents. Okay, daughter, what did you do today? What happened at school? And this is not happening. You're at home now. Everyone, even sitting at the dinner table, you're checking on your phone and putting each other. No, put the phone down. Maybe you can afford 30 minutes without just social media. Just spend time with them. I think this is really essential for prevention. But for you know, the support for the aftermath, if they have experienced that, how can you, you know, support them? And today, again, at the training, we have discussed coincidentally, like having a support system really help them cure faster, help them heal faster. And that's something that, you know, you need to be there for them. And sometimes you don't always understand, but just be there for them, be a listener, and don't be quick to judge. And that goes to the other day I wanted to talk about victim blaming. This is the rape culture. Yeah, she brought it on to herself. She was wearing miniskirt, and I love that was the UN woman that I'm going to participate again at the UN. There was African campaign in the sub-Saharan African region. They, you know, all the girls were wearing miniskirt and post on social media and said, it's not because what I'm wearing that's brought this to me. We have to end this from the demand side. It's not me who brought it to me. And this is one of the things. Another thing I want to talk about is the cultural norm. The cultural norms, which, you know, in the interest of time, I wouldn't dive into details. It's in my book. But I wanted to talk about, like, for instance, I'm from Asia. That's why the judge talked to me, said, your culture not talked about. And I give you my own experience. And my family, my friends, some of them, they don't talk to me anymore. Because they feel like I brought the shame to my family because of what happened to me. They wouldn't understand. And when I talked to them, they were like, oh, you shouldn't have left this situation. I said, what do you think? I should just wait there to be exploited, repeatedly exploited or abused, or maybe lose my life. And in my case, it was the situation. And or what is it you want me to do? So I tell you what it is. Don't talk about it. They said, they literally, like, I wasn't even, like, in the same room with them. I was on the phone. They were like, don't talk about it. I'm on the phone with you. You're on speakers. Other people will hear. Because they feel like I brought shame to them. And another example is I have, you know, some of the South Asian families. They reported, in that case, it's a domestic violence situation, reported the abuse to the police. And next thing, that was the wife who came to the police station and said, I want to withdraw the case. When the police said, no, we're not going to just drop the case because you want to withdraw. They investigated. It turns out the husband was threatening her life, said, you're not going to withdraw, I'm going to kill you. So there are so many, and I do my training that today I train police officers, law enforcement executives, I train lawyers, I train victim service providers. This is one of the, you know, lots of project subjects that I talk about, the culturally sensitive and linguistically sensitive peer. So these are the areas that we need to really be sensitive about.
Yeah.
Like, if you're talking to an Asian person, you have to be acting like this. If you're talking to, say, the Hispanic culture, the masculinity, same thing. It's like, African American culture. Maybe you can kind of relate with me. Sometimes I talk at the churches and they say, amen. Yes, I understand. Because people tell me, yeah, here, and in America, we call what happens in the family, things in the family. It's all,
yeah,
sure. It might look different, but we all have the same thing. And how can we, I always say, how can we, find the differences, but use our commonalities to solve? And what I say is to show them the love, give them the benefit of doubt, and give them the support, and don't be quick to judge.
I completely agree. It's I know with the advent of social media, a lot of people, there's always been tweets and stuff that says, I think we all live the same life. And it's because we all relate it to maybe a favorite TV show or something like that. But I truly think that would be something that would help us step forward just as a human race, as us, instead of focusing on all our differences, like focus on our commonalities, because I don't think at the end of the day, a majority of people in the world want others to hurt. I hope it's not that way. I run into some very, very terrible people, but still, my hope is that the world is majority good. Like, those are just outliers. But I did want to share an experience that I had. One of our guests in the first season, she had mentioned they're given the nickname Juicy Girls in South Korea. They are girls that are trafficked, that hang around the bars right outside of, I think it's Osan and Kunsan and those areas. But I also experienced that in Guam. There's a few other islands a little bit north of Guam that they do exactly what you had mentioned, where they promise the young lady a great job or something like that, and then they get them to Guam and take their passports and other identification and stuff like that. And I think what really blew my mind about that situation, when someone explained it to me, because I was like, who are these girls? Why are they just sitting outside? They laughed. They laughed at these women that are, they have really no way out. And I guess my question from that is, how do you get people to see these people, like, whether they're male or female or, somewhere in between, but like, how do you get people to see someone that's trafficked as a human being rather than just a product?
That is such a good topic, because we tell people, first of all, why do people traffic human beings? Because let's say I have this pair of glasses. You sell it to me, you can't resell it to me. But if you sell this person, you can sell them and resell them and resell them over and over and over. And that's what I mean. End of the day, these crimes are all profit-driven. So that's one of the things. But as far as, concerned citizen, when we see this kind of situation, I really tell people about the love that we need to be, as I mentioned earlier. It doesn't matter. You may not know that. And I think early on, there was something that came across my mind really fast. I wanted to say that something you said reminded me about hurt people.
Yeah.
I've been doing this work for so long, and I'm sure, you might have come across situations, and some of my peers and leaders have come across this situation. We got attacked on social media attacks. And you have to look at the situation. I mean, in addition to, we really don't have time to give energy to the negative energies, but where do they come from? And unfortunately, there are people we have to kick out of our groups. But one of the resources, before I forget, I was going to say at the end, is the International Survivors Network. So we have a network of survivors, and that is on Facebook, and I can share the link with you, which you can share later.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Yes, I think it would be really helpful for the survivors to share the experiences together, because, you know, while there are concerned citizens, they really care. And I must say, in my own experience, they might ask the wrong question. Let's say, tell me about your story. This is like the worst worry. Question you can ask, because do you know, like, how many months are they, or how many years? And in the professional field that I work in, to be on the leadership roles, you must be free from those situations at least 4 years before you can even do that, because there's re-traumatization.
Right.
Even with that, we have a lot of protocols. For instance, if we're in a board meeting and you get triggered, you are okay. It's okay. You can go away. And I understand this is a video interview, so I cannot turn off the camera. But in a board meeting, in those kind of settings, you are not required to turn on your camera. You have your own privacy. And there are a lot of, that's what I call a culturally sensitive trauma-informed survivor center. These are all the practices that we need to apply. And that's another thing about the multidisciplinary. So what can we do on the leadership level? What can we do to support the survivor? And going to the survivors, I talked about the cultural sensitivity, and I said, you know, no one is the same. And how do we find what we talked about, the commonality? So I always, in my training, to tell my victim providers and also the law enforcement to say, do your homework. You don't just say, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I work with lawyers, and I'll be honest, like, I feel offended about that, because they read their case the day before. No, I feel guilty sometimes that, you know, I have so much work on my docket that maybe I get delayed. But if I have to stay up overnight, I will, because
right.
I will study that patient or study that victim about what is the case, what is the background, where are they come from. Each person is different. It's not the same cookie cutter. So you have to, what I call, like, how do we, my training is like, how to improve the effectiveness of supporting victims. And they don't have to be like immigrant. They don't have to be culturally specific. I'm talking about individuals who are American citizens live in this country. I know American citizens who does not speak a word of English, but they're citizens. And how can you help them? How can you make them feel comfortable? And I give you example, law enforcement, regardless whether they are foreigners or American citizens, there are a lot of people who does not trust law enforcement. So how can you build that rapport? And there's the empathy method. And then when it comes down to everyday citizens, how can you do that? And I talked about the love. Just give them the benefit of doubt. Maybe they are angry. You know, I remember a long time ago, there's a pastor talk about, well, you're at the cash register at the grocery store, and that lady might be like me. But you have to just think, maybe she had a bad day. Maybe she had a long day. Maybe she's not feeling well. Then your reaction to her will make a huge difference. Because if you're mean to her, will add to her burden of whatever it is causing her to be that way. And in that case, the pastor said, you know, instead of everyone just maybe being upset with her, or maybe even be, you know, just ignore what she said, say, hey, how you doing? Just be nice to her. And you have no idea how this will really, like, brighten up their day.
And, oh, absolutely.
Right? And when it comes to, like, the sexual assault victim, the sex trafficking victims, domestic violence victims, they all share this thing about the self-confidence. After their abuse and trauma, they have no confidence, and you can see them. They don't look at you. They have no eye contact. That is when you see it. And in that case, a compliment can make a huge difference. I love your dress. You look so pretty in them. That's it. All it takes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm big on giving people compliments because I had that exact problem. I would not look people in the eye. The anxiety was too much for me. So that was a challenge that a therapist gave me probably 3 or 4 years ago. Just saying, pick something out on somebody that you think they would love to hear a compliment about. So I usually go for fingernails, but there's I'll compliment glasses, shoes, like whatever. And the way that people light up, just that, I guess a random stranger noticed them, is that it made it a lot easier to finally try and connect with people after that kind of trauma. Because I honestly, I didn't like feeling vulnerable like that. Like, I didn't want somebody to look into my eyes and see all of that pain and that anger and sadness. And it was empowering, kind of just like making somebody else kind of cheer up and in whatever mood they were in. And so now I still keep that up. And every time I leave the house, I'm like, okay, I'm going to compliment 5 people. And it pays. But I did have another question for you. You had mentioned your book before. Would you like to share the subject matter on that one? But it's more about your personal story, correct?
Yes. While it is about my personal story, people will read it and say, I would like you to tell me more. So to let you in a little bit secret, I'm working on my maybe second or third book.
Oh.
So the long story short, this book is about 150 pages. When I finished my draft, was 250. So I had, the second book ready to go. But this book was written more on the kind of like the technology, not my technology as like computer, but the technical information, what we call like technical assistance support in our industry. But talks about, there are charts, there are stats, and there are terminologies about what exactly is human trafficking. What are the different types of human trafficking? I talked earlier, it's not just, sex trafficking. There's labor trafficking, there is organ trafficking, there's forced marriage, domestic servitude, and what are each of them? And I also talked about what I mentioned earlier in chapters about the cultural norms, cultural norms that are dissected into different cultures. What are the behaviors, and including even like Arabic culture, the sub-Saharan African culture, and the different cultures. And most importantly, as the book title says, it's a step-by-step guide to survivors, particularly to really guide them to say, okay, this is where I was and this is where I am today. This is something that I documented and something proven to be helpful. And how can you really just follow, say, checklist? Okay, I did this, I did this, I did this, and this is where I'm going to go. And that's what the next book is about, is to really like share more of my story about, the traumatization. But this book, it targets the law enforcement with them to have a better understanding about the trauma and the culture and survivor-centered care for the general public to understand what I talked about today, what is human trafficking, everything, and for the survivors, step-by-step. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely wonderful. Congratulations on that. A question I would want to ask is, in my personal situation, when I was in college, I had experienced domestic violence, and it was so foreign to me that I didn't understand that was what was happening to me. And it was very violent. My life was in danger. And when I did finally report it, and this was in a relationship that I guess was an actual relationship for 6 months, but us being Netflix and chilling was, popular back then. But when we entered the actual relationship, that's when it just turned into just danger. But when I did go to report it, the police were so dismissive. And I would say the first actual sexual assault, I didn't really know what to do. I think my mind just immediately buried that situation away. Like, it was like, we're not going to acknowledge this. We're just going to, keep trucking. You're about to graduate. Like, just don't worry about it. But when I did finally go to the police, I had documentation. I've been journaling since I was in fifth grade. So I had journals. I had all of these text message evidence. I had emails. I had stalking, evidence of this person driving by the house and everything and showing up at the house unannounced. And the police were like, well, you should have just reported it. I think the first event that happened to me was in March of 2012. They said you should have reported it then. And when I did finally go to report it, I think it was maybe June of 2012. And what can someone do if they're in that situation where they're not taken seriously? Is there someone else they can go to?
I can relate with you. I have heard a lot of similar situation myself. I've worked with law enforcement. I think it has been a lot of progress that was done for them to be trained about being trauma-informed and being, victim-centered. But I forgot what project I was working on, but I had also mentioned that sometimes victims feel like they're being treated as criminals or they're not free. It's like,
yeah,
it couldn't happen to you. Oh no, yeah, you do this and you do that, but it's your fault, and they say that, and the victim blaming comes along with it. But in short, there are different, levels of police. So you can go to your city police, can be your county sheriff. You can also, go to the district attorney's office. And I tell you that because each, we're in different city, there might be different variations, but what is the most helpful is, and I can provide you all the information to be linked below. But in short, when it comes to whether it's human trafficking, whether it's sexual assault and domestic violence, they all have their hotlines. And the hotlines, what's great about this, they will find your local resources. Because sometimes the first step, and I always tell people, we work with victims, and the first thing is about the safety plan. Do you really want to report first, or do you want to have a safety plan? Like in my case, I mentioned, my family is 8,000 miles away. I don't have a place to go. So if I report, it will put me in more danger. So I need to plan, say, where am I going to go first? And do they have an opening? And the shelters, and that's, one of the major missions of OPIX Global, in addition to saving lives, is because of this shortage, huge shortage of shelters, our mission are to build shelters. And so find your shelters, but also check if they're available. Or find a place, whether it's your friends or maybe, if it will be great, you have friends and family to stay at. In my victimization, I was first victimized because I didn't have a place to stay. So these are all the variations you have to put into consideration. But when this safety plan is made, then call the hotline. Say, okay, these are, what are the departments that can help? And also, what's really great is those shelters or the nonprofit organizations, they might have caseworkers that can direct you to them. Because you mentioned earlier, sometimes, it can be just intimate partner. But sometimes they might be married. So it's not just okay, I'm done and I can, wipe my hands, done. But then it's the civil lawsuit about custody. And a lot of the times that's what they use to, really still connect with you and can continue to abuse you. And domestic violence is not just about violence. And that's another misconception that I thought it was just violence. There's financial abuse. There's psychological abuse, there's sexual abuse, and these are all the things that you have to understand. So they will give you not just the police department in terms of law enforcement, but also the legal departments, the directions, and hopefully in your county, in your city, there are some pro bono lawyers that, you know, are willing to help you. But I can tell you it is hopeful because I'm getting a lot of requests. And like I mentioned, I train law enforcement executives. There are 18,000 police departments across the nation. And when I went last year to provide the training to those executives, they are very kind of, you know, on the same page with us. But it takes a long time to really implement from the higher level to the lower level. So there's still much more work to be done. And I hope that, you know, in my lifetime, I always say I'm planting the seeds, watering the seeds.
Yeah.
Start somewhere. And you're doing great work. I really commend you, you know, and share the light on the hope to people that there is hope at the end of the tunnel. Just keep fighting.
Yes, absolutely. I would say that was the biggest hurdle to cross was after 2019, I became completely hopeless. I was engaged and I thought this person was the love of my life, and turned out he wasn't. But I had built it up in my head that this was my happy ending. You know, this is why I went through all of that trauma beforehand. And I say, unbeknownst to me, that guy really wasn't that great. He did less than the bare minimum, but because I had come from a history of abuse, I thought the bare minimum was somebody putting in so much effort into a relationship. So when that ended, I just gave up. I was like, I don't want to live life if that's all it's going to be is trauma after trauma after trauma. But if you are able to find something to attach hope to, whether that's just finding a new passion, whether you're just like, you know what, I'm going to get really good at swimming, or I'm going to take up canoeing or anything, and it becomes something that you can gain a sense of self-worth from and start to build back maybe a better network. You get other people that are into canoeing or hiking, and you can find safe people and start to just rebuild that way. You will come a long way rather than just isolating and self-medicating and pretty much harming yourself and re-traumatizing yourself on your own, rather than trying to branch out and find a new way of living. And that was definitely the most difficult part for me. But you did mention before that one thing I wanted to touch on was the different kinds of abuse that are in domestic violence, because I had the physical piece, but I also did not understand that the financial part was there. So like that in 2012, that boyfriend, I would spend thousands of dollars on him each month. And I'm a broke college student, but we happened to work at the same place, and I worked full time and he was part time. So I would just shower him in all of these gifts and whatever else, then vacations, hoping that if he was satisfied with that, maybe he wouldn't hit me, you know? And, I didn't know that wasn't normal for some reason. I was just very naive back then. But there are a lot of different aspects of abuse, and I just would want our listeners to hear that so that maybe they can recognize, oh, okay, something isn't right in my relationship. So yeah, if you could share a couple more, that would be wonderful.
I appreciate that, you know, you share your personal experiences. I think it's so important for people to know that this is real. And as I mentioned earlier, that there are so many similarities, and that's why I work, you know, specifically focusing on domestic violence, human trafficking, sexual assault, because there's this what we call the power and control wheel. There are so many similarities, and I'll give you an example I mentioned earlier. So the stage one, they shower you with gifts and to show the love, and it doesn't have to be gifts. You know, in different situations, maybe Like I mentioned, that my recently released video talked about my situation. But, you know, maybe that person was trying to say they're your savior or
yeah,
that you're vulnerable.
And that was it. That was exactly it.
Right. Or maybe you are vulnerable because you feel like I'm not loved. So many of us are not, you know, they don't feel loved. And this is a key. And I grew up in the situation that my dad passed away really young. So I didn't have the love of my father. And I was always like longing for that love from men. And in that case, even older men, because my dad passed away. And so people can smell it. Men can smell it. So in my blog, Valentine's Day, I posted on my social media. And I tell people, if you are with someone in a healthy relationship, I'm really happy for you, you know, just really enjoy it. But if you're single, love yourself.
Yes.
And, you know, coming from my culture and just not just my culture again, I always tell like, and this is how I was brought up, that I don't love myself. I remember one of the first argument I had with my therapist was, no, I don't want to love myself because in my culture, it means I'm selfish, but I'm not selfish, so I'm not going to love myself. But that's just like, yeah, it's not just, you know, you and other people from different culture, the same thing.
Amen.
How can you love yourself? When you feel you are enough, and that is the time when you have this energy to attract people.
Yeah.
Attract people who are whole. Because it's similar to I hurt people, hurt people, but it's not the same. It's like, you know, they said, okay, if I want, let's say if you don't have enough love for yourself, and that person smell it and they can feel in the wrong energy. And that's a good example. But if you have the love, you know, I always tell people that I would love to have a partner, but I don't need them.
Right.
Because that did it. Oh my God. But at the time, I felt like I need someone to make me whole. You know, I can share, you mentioned like the happy ending. And it took me a long time to write my book because I never finished it. I'm like, I don't have a happy ending.
Right.
I don't have a person for the happy ending. No, the happy ending is not about being with someone.
Right.
The happy ending is that you are happy with yourself.
Yeah.
And that is the happy ending. I think it's so important. But, you know, back to the power and control. So they make you like feel loved. They make sure that whole, whatever it is that you're vulnerable.
Really?
That's the number one. And number two, now they make you feel that they are the only thing in your life.
Yep.
That's the dangerous part because you trust them and they obviously, they earned, but they pretended to earn your trust and then they start isolating you. They isolate you from your family and friends. They will convince you no, because your friends are going to tell you, no, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. You should watch out the red flag. And trust me, and I'm sure you probably have those advices too. And I tell my friend, what are you jealous about my relationship or this? Because you should be happy for me.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, because on the other ear, he was telling me, no, they don't want you to be happy. They just jealous that I love you and everything. So you really, God sent you those angels to tell you, have your ears open and listen to them. And then, you know, once they manage to isolate you, that's when they get to control you. They can do whatever they want. And then, you know, back to the self-confidence, the self-love and the self-esteem. The simplest thing they're going to say is, yeah, feel free to leave. No one else is going to love me like what I do to you. Then you're going to think, yeah, do I just stay? Well, at least I have someone. But no, I tell you, like God, I tell myself afterwards, I say, God, have to close that window or close that door before he opens the other door.
Right.
You must close this door first.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you just gave a play-by-play, I think every relationship I was in prior to the one I'm in right now, and it was exactly that, was I was trying to fill what I thought was missing, and I had no self-confidence. I had no self-love, and each of those people were very predatory, and I think they could see, like, I was very pretty
woman, but I was unsure of myself and I would, you know, just let everything slide. And so there was that love bombing, like you've mentioned. Then, yeah, my friend, I remember my good friend in college, we actually worked in that same place, Adriana. She tried desperately to get me to see that this person was not safe. And I couldn't see it. It was like being under a spell or something, you know? I was completely brainwashed by this person. And I did actually get in touch with her years later, and all I could say to her was, thank you. I mean, I'm so sorry I didn't listen, but thank you for trying. I owe her my life, definitely, for just at least trying, you know? But it became the isolation. I never saw my friends anymore. I mean, heck, the next time around with the engagement, I moved all the way to Guam. You know what I mean? Like, that's one of the most isolated places in the world. But it's really crazy how it's the same game plan every time, but you're so bowled over by each step in that process that you really don't see it. And listeners, if a loved one, if it's a family member, a friend, your child, whomever, if they say, Mom, I don't like this person, Dad, I don't like them, they're seeing something you don't. I don't think that people are out there trying to, I don't know, keep you miserable. They see something that you're not seeing. That's one thing I learned from each of these situations, was that there were plenty of people in my ear saying, hey, are you sure about this one? And now I'm like, okay, if someone ever says that to me again, like, I'll listen, hands down. Like, I'll get opinions from everybody in my circle. And if like it's 5 out of 6 people are like, yeah, no, we don't like them, then poof. That's all it would take, because people that genuinely care about you, they are going to try to protect you from a situation like that, like, no matter what.
Dana, you're so right. And you know, I feel the same, because for a while I didn't understand. I tell the people from my church, as I mentioned earlier, I was like down on my knees and angry with God, literally. I said, I'm all alone. Why are you doing this to me?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand, because he said he loves me. And no, looking back, I can laugh about it. But back then, I just didn't understand. I couldn't wrap my head around it.
Yeah, my friend, yeah, like,
would a person who loved you do that to you? That's the simple answer.
Mm-hmm. Another question I had learned to ask was, if someone was treating like your best friend that way or your sister that way, would you be okay with it? And if the answer is no, then you make a safety plan and get yourself out of there. But it is really, really insane to hear that there is a specific game plan that is used, and it is so effective. That's so scary. But thank you for sharing that with our listeners. Hopefully that can give someone maybe a wake-up call that they didn't know they needed.
You to look up this wheel. It's called the Power and Control Wheel. It's the Jarvis model from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
It's also in my book, and it tells you, you know, all the tactics that they do. And it is very powerful, the tactics that they use. And like I said, I found this commonality in all those three crimes, and that's why I say it's very close. And if you look at the stats, people who are victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, are more likely to be trafficked. And really, you know, I don't have stats about that, but in my opinion, I think it is really what the root cause is, because, you know, if you psychologically think that you lack something, not necessarily the same perpetrator, but other perpetrators can still use that vulnerability for other reasons.
That makes complete sense. Eileen, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today. This has been very enlightening, and I would love to hear the name of your book again so I can put it in the show notes, and then any other projects that you have coming up this year, please feel free to share them so that our listeners can follow you and learn more about you and your mission, and hopefully assist in any way they can as well.
Thank you so much. Yes, the name of the book is called Thank Your Predator, A Guide to Trauma Recovery from Abuse. I know it's really long, so if you type a wrong word on Amazon, I tried it. You can't find it. Well, just go to my name, EileenDahl.com. I know it's like I have a short name, so it's easier. There's a link to that. And Chopix Global, as I mentioned, it's a nonprofit organization. Even though it's based out of Houston, Texas, we have those resources also listed on the website, as well as the Power and Control Wheel, the story about the butterfly, and other resources and upcoming events. Some of the announcement that I would like to make is, April, that we're in the month of April, is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. So there will be a lot of events. One of the parallel projects that we do is, I actually also have a podcast, also, focused on victims of human trafficking, domestic violence, sexual assault, as well as the advocates to come out and share those subject matter experts' issues. And in the April, we will be rolling out more events. And by April, I would have attended the March UN Women 68 session. And as you know, like the gender-based violence is such a dynamic issue, and it takes like so many different partners, which we talked about, in different root causes. So this session is going to emphasize on the financial aspects of how to get women to be financially independent, and how does that intersect with this. So I'm excited to share with you with more insights on my blogs as well as, So HopeX Global has a website. It's HopeX Global. It's in the name of my signature, .org. And again, like there are so many other things that we're doing. If you're in the Houston area, we're going to roll out the first time human trafficking awareness exhibit in the city.
Oh, wow.
So yes, tune in on the website. And if you are a survivor, and if you have, it doesn't have to be a survivor advocate, have a book, or maybe, a documentary, or like a spoken word, like a poem, or some of the written publications, we welcome you to submit your nomination to the International Book Award. This is the first and only of its kind to really highlight the voices, just like here, Rochelle, and like myself, we come out of the situation, we are doing the work, and how can we really, how can I, as an ambassador, how can the nonprofit to recognize you for your effort, but more importantly, to share that light of the hope with other people who are still going through that. So that's another thing. And last but not least, we also have our annual conference called the International Conference on Abuse. So you ask me a lot of questions, but listeners might be different levels. If you're interested in learning about what this is all about, if you are in the service provider work, NGOs or law enforcement, then you might want to connect with the other subject matter experts and learn about best practices and case studies. And if you are a survivor leader, and it's another word, opportunities, and maybe for you to share your story and et cetera. So I think, really the best way is to tune in on our website, the same names, or social media, the same names, EileenDahl.official, and you'll see like the updates there. Thank you, Rochelle.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And also, you do have a YouTube channel where all of these things are updated very frequently, too. So I'll make sure to get all of that in our show notes. And I just, from my heart to yours, thank you for everything that you're doing. Thank you for sharing your story. And I know you're making a huge difference worldwide. And I hope to get there one day, but I just, it seems like every episode I gain a new hero. So welcome to my hero club.
Thank you. Thank you, Val. I think the feeling is mutual. You are doing great work, and your voice will reach the world that it will reach there. And if there's anything I can be here to assist, I am here for y'all. Like I said, we're here to plant the seeds and water the seeds, and there is hope at the end of the tunnel. And together, we can make a big difference.
Well, isn't she amazing? Like I said, I have a new hero, and I think you probably do too by now. So Eileen is actually an expert about this topic. So if you want to learn more, in our show notes, there is her website, her blog, her book. Just go ahead and get all you can from her and glean what you can, because she is the de facto expert on human trafficking. And if you'd like to send her a message, you can just go to this episode on our website. If you see between the previous episode and next episode, there's a purple button that says Send Eileen a Message. Click that and you will be taken to the Salute to Survivors page. And there you can just leave a message of thanks or encouragement. And I do have a reason for doing this. We will have a special episode during this season, just reading letters from listeners to our survivors from previous season and this one. My inbox was really full after the first season. So this is amazing. And I'm really excited to share these notes. We do have for our second season a guest that is rolling out a mental health app that is strictly for veterans so that they can get to mental health care quickly rather than waiting. We also have interviews focused on alternative methods of treatment, whether that is plant-based or something called floating, which I think you'll find pretty interesting. And we do have some guests that are here to explain the numbers side of MST, including how MST affects taxpayers. Community-wise, we do have an online community that's rolling out soon. To get the updates on that, just have to join our mailing list and you'll be the first to know before anybody else. And we are also, in this community, what we're doing is giving a place for survivors and their loved ones to come together, to share resources, and to grow together into healing. So, of course, I'll have more information about that as well, because, of course, we all just want to get to a place of healing so that we can share that healing with other people. And if you haven't noticed, we do have a whole lot of journals available now on the website. They're 30-day journals, and they range over many mental and emotional health topics. So you can get one just to give yourself a boost, find a hidden gem, or maybe you're stuck in your healing journey right now and you just need something to get you through. This is the journal for you. And there is more for season two, but I don't want to give it all away here. So I'm going to have you stay tuned. I'm your host again. My name's Rachelle Smith, and I invite you to stay safe, be kind, and take care. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on Silent Voices, Stories of MST. If you found this content helpful, don't forget to subscribe for more resources and support. Remember, you're not alone in this journey. Together, we can create a more supportive and understanding community for survivors of MST. Until next time, we'll see you later.